We'll shine on the rain report for February 25, 2011 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, this is the Rain Report, Ham Radio's audio feature magazine. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. The sun is what makes the world go round. The ham world, that is. One website devoted to the sun and its effects on terra firma is spaceweather.gov, a government-run site that draws over 1 million hits per day, 6 million when there's a major solar event like the one that occurred Valentine's Week here in 2011. Rob Steinberg, KA8JBY, is a space weather forecaster with that website. His involvement with NOAA, N-O-A-A, in Colorado began in 2007, while in the Air Force as an Air Force liaison. Then in 2009 until last October, Rob worked in Houston, Texas in NASA's Space Radiation Analysis Group. He then returned to Colorado in October 2010, where he resides today. Here's part one of Hap Hawley, KC9RP's conversation with Rob.
I came to space weather kind of late in my career. I started out in the Air Force as a terrestrial meteorologist, but it turns out that the website had been around for several years. It was one of the first, and I can't remember, it was among the first 100 websites to go on in the 90s, full-time providing space weather data to a variety of users, and those users have just skyrocketed over the years. Lots of people are interested in it, especially in the amateur radio community, of course, so we have lots of people looking at it. How it evolved? Originally, I think the Space Weather Prediction Center was known as the Space Environment Center and was part of the Office of Atmospheric Research within NOAA, and they had a little more, I guess they grew this thing from the ground up, from within house. Recently, they became part of the National Weather Service, and so the content and structure changed somewhat to mirror the other National Weather Service. It kind of has a look and feel similar to what you'd find for a forecast office. The purpose is to inform. We try and give users a variety of data. We have customers with a variety of interests, ranging from geomagnetic storms, which are of particular interest, for instance, to the power companies, radio blackouts that are of interest to ham radio operators, as well as folks routing airlines over polar regions who need HF communications for portions of their journey. We've got particle information on there for solar energetic particles that can play havoc with satellites and also really ruin your day if you happen to be outside on an extravehicular activity up on the space station. So we've got a wide range of people using the data, so we try and make it available for folks.
How often is the information updated, and how is it gathered?
Updates can range anywhere from minutes to daily updates. X-ray data is updated every minute, and we'll have graphics showing the X-ray flux from the GOES satellite. Similarly, we'll have satellite environment information such as particles at geosynchronous orbit that's updated as that information is available, typically 1 minute to 5 minute cadence. We have geomagnetic indices that are updated every 3 hours. Most hams, I think, are familiar with that because you get the geomagnetic indices that come out in the WWV reports are done every 3 hours. Also, the solar flux values. We do our noon solar flux, so that's once a day. The forecast product that we write is currently updated once a day. And then we have a variety of alerts and summaries for space weather conditions that are just issued as needed. With this recent activity, we can issue, for instance, different types of radio emission alerts and warnings within seconds of each other as they occur.
Tell me more about how this information is gathered.
Well, we have a huge variety of data sources. Some of the most obvious are the information that we get from the satellites, the geostationary satellites, the GOES birds have space environment sensors on them. So we gather information from those, and those come through NESDIS and NOAA to us. We also receive all sorts of information from the NASA satellites, the research satellites. There's a satellite that we rely on heavily called ACE, which is stationed between us and the sun. And it's kind of like our early warning buoy that gives us information about shock passage from coronal mass ejections, the level of energetic particles in the solar wind, those type of things. So we use that a lot. We also use imagery from a satellite called SOHO and another two satellites, actually, the STEREO mission, which was launched a few years ago, currently making its way around either side of the sun. In fact, I think on Super Bowl Sunday, they were perfectly aligned on either side of the sun. So it was the first time we had a really fantastic look at the entire sun. The latest one, the SDO satellite, Solar Dynamics Observer, launched within the past year or two. I can't remember exactly when it was launched, but it's been providing some spectacular imagery, particularly of this latest outburst. And so we've come to really enjoy getting that imagery and being able to analyze it. The interesting thing is, of those satellites I've mentioned so far, the only operational satellites, the only ones that are required to be up and providing data continuously, are the GOES, or the geostationary satellites. All the other ones, SDO, SOHO, and STEREO, are all research satellites.
You're listening to a conversation between spaceweather.gov forecaster Rob Steinberg, KA8JBY, and Rains Hapali, KC9RP.
So we kind of got mechanisms in place to obtain that data, but it's not always available. And because it's research, it doesn't have the same priority for availability that an operational satellite would have. So sometimes we're confronted with those kind of problems when we lose data or imagery.
There's a certain pecking order there.
Yeah, sometimes there's an outage or something. We may not see data for days. In fact, sometimes, depending on what the situation is, and then get it back and we can use it again. But that makes it more challenging to make our forecasts. So that's the space-based data. We also get a lot of data from ground-based stations, ground-based solar observatories, both optical and radio observatories, provide us with sunspot reports. The radio observatories provide us with information about any kind of radio events happening on the sun. In particular, we look for type 2 bursts, another signature called type 4, 10-centimeter radio bursts. So there are a few different signatures that we look for and that can tell us different things about what's happening on the sun. Those come from the radio telescopes. And then we have geomagnetic data. We have a variety of magnetometers and magnetometer data that are provided to us through the U.S. Geological Survey and some other places. So that gives us an idea of how the Earth's geomagnetic field is responding to the events that are happening in geospace. So we have NESDIS. Now I have to try and remember what the acronym is. Those are the folks charged with obtaining the GOES data and handing it off to the different users. We are one of those users because the GOES satellites, they're primarily up there for terrestrial weather. So they've got a bunch of sensors pointed at Earth, and those are the satellites providing you with the cloud loop imagery and things like that that folks are used to seeing on places like the Weather Channel. But they've also got space weather sensors on there. That group is the National Environmental Satellite Data and Information Service. So they get us the GOES data, and then they hand it off. Once we get it, we can do some pre-processing of the data and then basically extract the information we need and turn it into different displays that we use. For the ACE satellite requires tracking from a variety of Earth stations in order to provide continuous data. Consequently, we rely not only on NASA to provide data. We also have our own tracking antennas. We also work with international partners in Japan, Germany. Those stations basically take over tracking the satellite when it's in their field of view, and they provide the data to us that way. So if we lose one of those tracking stations for any reason, there's another potential outage of space weather data. And that's been a significant concern, particularly since the ACE satellite's been up there since the late 90s. In satellite terms, it's fairly old. One of the concerns has been making sure that we've got something identified to go up there and replace it so we don't lose that data stream. Other magnetometer data, as I said, was provided through the U.S. Geological Survey. They have various magnetometers around the United States, which sends data to them, and then that data is forwarded on to us, and we process it, and again, turn it into different products, tools for the forecasters to use, as well as products for the folks using our webpage. As far as the solar observatories go, our solar observatories, in general, we get reports from several Air Force observatories, both radio and optical, and also we get reports from a variety of other observatories around the globe run by both international and academic institutions. For instance, we get information from Mauna Loa, Big Bear Solar Observatory, Mount Wilson, and some other ones. Some of that data we pull right off the internet.
That concludes our first excerpt from a conversation Rains Hapali, KC9RP, had with Rob Steinberg, KA8JBY, a forecaster with spaceweather.gov. Next week, Rob will talk about Solar Cycle 24, a sunspot cycle that has proven to be a real bust for the HF ham bands. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2011. RAIN, all rights reserved. Now for RAIN's founder and producer, Hap-Holly KC9RP, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you all a very 73 from all of us at the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.